From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
Today's guest says you can tell a lot about a tree by the company it keeps. From unseen microbes to fungi, countless insects and other arthropods, to vertebrates like birds, squirrels, and even porcupines. From life in the soil around their roots to the action up in their canopies, trees are swarming with engagement, and their diverse community of companions is our topic today. So more in a moment, but first, these messages.
Underwriting support from Color Blends, supplying top-quality spring-blooming Dutch flower bulbs to landscape professionals and ambitious home gardeners. More information on the web, colorblends.com.
Programming and underwriting support from High Mowing Organic Seeds, now offering 100% organic vegetable, flower, and herb seeds for that farm and garden. Available at highmowingseeds.com.
Dr. James Nardi is a research scientist in the School of Integrative Biology at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, and he's the author and illustrator of several previous books. His latest is The Hidden Company That Trees Keep, Life from Treetops to Root Tips. And I'm happy he's joined us to talk about it today. Hi, Jim. How are you?
Oh, fine. Thank you for having me, Margaret.
Yes, congratulations on the book, and I should say we'll have a giveaway of a copy with the transcript of this show over on awaytogarden.com. Now, you don't just know all this and write all this, but you illustrate these two, these books of yours?
Yes, I do.
Oh, and my goodness.
I find it very soothing and relaxing, and I learn a lot from such close observation that's required in order to draw these creatures.
Oh, the illustrations are just, I'm so charmed, you know, I'm just so drawn in. Yeah. Yeah. So, and we'll include some with the transcript so that people can get a taste of your style. You know, it's funny, when I was reading the book and looking at the illustrations, I was thinking of another favorite author, the biologist, a prolific author, Barend Heinrich, you know, from formerly University of Vermont.
Oh, yes, sure.
And, you know, because he illustrates his too. And so I thought, oh, my goodness, what talent. So anyway, we're going to talk about these big organisms, kind of, I don't know, are they the biggest organisms in our you know, average world over here, these trees?
Well, yes. I think the record is held by a redwood tree.
Yeah.
They can certainly be very large, but they can also be very ancient and very small.
Yeah. But in our, you know, in our average world, those of us who are gardeners listening in our backyards, I mean, they're the biggest creatures we see day to day. They're the giants of the landscape. So you start the book with the sentence, you can tell a lot about a tree by the company it keeps. And so just to get us started, the range is from what to what? We're tiny to what?
Oh, well, we can begin with the viruses and then move on. The microbes, we're discovering a new world out there that we didn't know existed just a few years ago. And that's the microbial world that's associated with each individual. With you, not only ourselves, but with the trees and the small companions that they keep. Even small bacteria have contain viruses and smaller bacteria within them.
That's very small.
Indeed, it is.
And I say, as I said in the introduction, it goes up to trees. Companions go up to mammals and other large animals and so forth. But where I am, black bear tend to like running up a tree. If they get a sight of you, they go run up a tree.
How fortunate you are to have black bears.
Yes, we have. My best thing was the other day I had a mink in the backyard swimming in the water garden that was semi-frozen. So that's a digression.
What a treat. What a
crazy,
treat.
Crazy. But a lot of the companions are insect species. And so I was fascinated in the book you talk about the diversity, the great range, and certain tree species have a lot of diverse insects that engage with them, don't they?
Oh, and indeed, you know, we usually think of the insects that feed on trees, but there are far more insects that prey on these plant-eating insects, and even far more that are parasitic on these insects. And these help maintain a balance in the life of the tree that so many of us are unaware of, the importance of these predators and parasites in maintaining a balance in the life of the tree.
Yeah. And you also write about, you know, lately, especially, you know, and we talk about, you know, boosting our immune systems and immune diseases and immune this and that. But we animal types aren't the only ones with immune systems by any means. So the tree has this really incredible, impressive immune system as well. Yes.
Right. We normally think of trees as passive creatures.
Yeah.
However, they're quite capable of mounting a robust defense, immune response. And by immune response, we mean the ability to distinguish self from non-self. So non-self would include everything from other insects, microbes, the bite from a porcupine. And so they're not only able to defend themselves with their own sophisticated immune system, but they're able to recruit animal and microbial allies to help defend them.
Right. And I think if you asked gardeners, you know, well, what allies do trees have? They'd probably say, oh, well, you know, I guess some animals disperse their seeds and some pollinate them. They'd know that maybe, but they wouldn't know all these other really complex ally relationships.
Sure. We know that birds help control the populations of the leaf-eating and wood-eating insects. But there's a whole world out there of parasitic insects. And this is, in terms of diversity, it's probably one of the most diverse. 15% of all animal species are believed to be parasitic insects. And parasitic insects make up about 10% of the number of species of insects. These are incredibly diverse. Some of them are very specific. They have specific hosts on the tree, and some of them are generalists. There are flies called tachinid flies whose larvae feed on over 100 different species of tree herbivores.
Wow. And it's incredibly complex. And as I said when we began speaking, you know, the illustrations in the book really give you a look at some of these creatures, some of which are quite small or you may never have seen. And I loved, you know, kind of, it's not like one organism is getting all the benefit or the other organism is the harmful one. You know, we can't put those judgments. It's a complex sort of interaction, dance, whatever. I loved there was one illustration in the book. It was a bird in a nest in a tree. So it's taking advantage of like the protection of the leafy, you know, of the nest, the branch to hang its nest on and the leafy protection. But it also gets advantages from being there and also provides services to the tree, right?
Oh, indeed. Indeed. Each of these birds will feed on, in its lifetime, will feed on thousands of caterpillars, plant-eating insects. And so the tree never has to worry about being defoliated with the help of its avian as well as insect allies.
Right. And as sort of cryptic, as hidden as many of those insects, those caterpillars and so forth try to be, in the book you say the birds leave no leaf unturned. You know, they look and look and look, right? They hunt out their
oh,
dinner.
Indeed. And all the crevices in the bark. And they're very thorough. And on the ground.
Yeah.
beneath the tree, among the leaf litter.
The bark is something. The bark is really special. It's one of the ways that sometimes, like in winter tree ID, we can start to tell what species of tree it is. But it's I live in a spot where outside my window, where I sit most days and work in my little home office, is this very, very old triple trunk thuja, very giant tree with shaggy kind of cinnamon colored bark. And so all of the decades that I've been here, every year, I see a brown creeper, a bird, the brown creeper. And have a beautiful illustration of the brown creeper on some bark on the back of the book. And, you know, if not for that bark, I wouldn't see that bird who loves to investigate. And they have a relationship, right? I mean.
Oh, yes. So the brown creepers climb up the trunk of trees and the nuthatches climb down the trunks of trees. You probably have nuthatches on the same tree.
I do. And I call it the two-lane highway. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. One going up, one going down. Right. Yeah. But and what are they doing? I mean, there's birds that look, there's also birds that stash things, cache things in bark, but what are they doing? I mean, what's going on there? And does it serve the tree as well, or what's going on?
Oh, certainly. They're little insects that hide out in those crevices. And so they're constantly finding these insects and enriching their diets with them. The bark is alive with not only insects, but small creatures that are known as tardigrades.
Yes.
These can only be seen with a microscope. So it's an alien world there, but it's a world that can readily be seen if one just in a simple way. You can simply take some of this bark and extract some of these living creatures and view them with a digital microscope. It's something that could be done in classrooms. It can be done in at home.
Right.
So it's a wonderful education about an alien world that most people don't know about.
Right, because there's a lot of action going on in the bark. It's not just this impenetrable, the lichens and the mosses and the, as you say, all these small, like the tardigrades and all these tiny creatures.
Yes, some bark is covered extensively with lichens. There are certain trees that appear to be very popular with lichens, and most of their branches are almost completely covered. So that's a world into itself there. There's so many different creatures that associate with the lichens.
Yes, I think it's three species of lichen moths here. I can't remember, but I think there are three. And the painted, and I forget what the other ones are. And I never understood that. And then suddenly it was like, oh wait, lichen is in their name because they have this relationship with the lichen, and that has a relationship with the tree, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, or the rocks in some cases.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Now, you were talking about this a little bit before, but you also in the book lichen, not L-I-C-H-E-N, but L-I-K-E-N. Sorry, I stepped right into that. You liken a tree to having its leaf nibbled, to a human getting a mosquito bite, that it sets off this awareness, this chemical response. I know it's very complex, but...
It is complex, but... This was first reported in the journal Science about 2 years ago, and the authors compared their finding to what we observe when our skin is irritated by something like, let's say, a mosquito bite.
Right.
What happens at that time is the adjacent cells release a simple chemical. It's a derivative of the amino acid glutamic acid, it's glutamate.
Mm-hmm.
And when this is released, it excites the adjacent neurons, and these release calcium. And this wave of calcium is propagated all the way to the brain to let us know that we've been bitten by a mosquito. And something similar happens when an insect bites a leaf or a fungal hyphae penetrates the surface of a leaf. One of the first responses is the release of glutamate, and this triggers the release of calcium. And this is propagated throughout the cells of the plant to in a way similar to the propagation of a nerve response. And this in turn triggers a cascade of chemical reactions within the plant, ultimately resulting in the production of the master regulators of the tree's immune response, two hormones known as salicylic acid and jasmonic acid. And these in turn activate certain genes, defense genes, and just one example would be a protease that damages the proteins of the intruder, whether it's an insect or a fungus. So it's a complex series of events in the plant as well as in our own bodies that we're still unraveling. Mm. And we have much to learn about this, but we have bits and pieces that we understand. Yeah. And we just know it's a complex cascade. But
right, you say more than 1,000 volatile compounds may be released, you know, in defense against, you know, herbivory pathogens. Yeah. Even the ovipositing, even a wasp sticking its ovipositor into a tree, yes, that may even prompt a response.
It triggers a mild immune response.
Yeah.
And as I point out, every tree is associated with microbes, with they're referred to as endophytes because they live within the tree tissues, fungi and bacteria. And they're comparable to the bacteria that live within our own guts, our microbiome. So we can refer to this as the tree's microbiome. Mm. And when these enter the tree, they trigger a slight immune response, but it's a give and take. So the tree and the microbes come to a compromise, and what it does, it primes the immune system of the tree so that when the tree is exposed to real pathogens and noxious intruders, it can mount a strong immune response. Mm. So the endophytes, the bacteria and the fungi that live in harmony with the tree, do not help the tree when it really needs to defend itself.
There's so many, like if you had asked me before I read the book, your new book, The Hidden Company That Trees Keep, you know, if you had said, well, what's a sapsucker? I would have said, oh, yellow-bellied sapsucker, the bird, you know, drills the, you know, perfect, like, lines of, you know, grid of holes and so on. But there's tiny adelgid insects and scale insects. And so you speak about, you write about all of these and you illustrate all these incredible interactions. And my favorite example of leaf nibbling, if you could call it that, I always love to see the activity of a leaf cutter bee. Isn't that just astonishing?
Oh, yes. It's amazing. It's a perfect little circle. It's able to cut these perfect little circles from the edges of it. Has its the leafcutter bees seem to have preferences in which trees they leaves they choose. They seem to have a particular fondness for redbud trees, and they also seem to be fond of rose leaves. They tend to avoid trees like oaks that have rather sturdier and thicker leaves. So I think they choose some of the tender leaves like red buds.
Hmm. So I wanted to go down the tree to the base, and, you know, trees drop their leaves, whether annually or on a less frequent cycle. And then there's all this material beneath, and there's these helpers, this intricate network of helpers who facilitate the process of returning all that to the soil and to the tree, I suppose. And you say in the book that recycling is a community effort. So a couple of creatures there. I mean, I love millipedes. I love the burying beetles. I love lots of those creatures in the soil. Tell us a little bit. Let's take a couple minutes to talk about some of those guys, the recyclers.
Sure. The microbes are important here too. Down in the leaf litter, the bacteria and fungi are digesting leaf tissue. But some of these larger little creatures like mites and springtails and millipedes and woodlice are chewing away at the fallen leaves and fragmenting them so that the bacteria and the fungi have a larger surface area on which their enzymes can work. And so it is a community affair. There are thousands, millions of these little critters down in the soil that are chomping away. And ultimately, they liberate the mineral nutrients like calcium, magnesium, manganese, iron from the leaves. And they also produce, leave behind this extremely important part of the soil known as humus. And this is the really hard to digest remains of things like the bacterial cell walls, a hard to digest material in plant cell walls known as lignin.
Yes.
And this humus has a wonderful attribute of latching on to mineral nutrients because it has a negative charge and it holds on to positive charged nutrients like calcium and magnesium and iron and holds them into place so that they're not leached down into the deep soil. And we often forget about the importance of these recyclers, but one of my favorite quotes comes from a book by entitled Teeming with Microbes.
Oh, yes.
You probably know it.
Jeff Lowenfeld.
Jeff Lowenfeld. And it's that no one has ever had to fertilize a old growth forest.
Right.
You don't have to add fertilizer because these little decomposers and recyclers are liberating the nutrients. And then they're also producing the humus that holds these nutrients in place and gives the soil this wonderful spongy texture, structure that it would not have if it weren't for the humus.
Right.
And they're also, and not only are they liberating these minerals, but they're actually mixing the mineral particles of the soil with the organic parts of the soil.
So in the last, we have maybe 3 minutes, and I wanted to just speak about, you know, I have a very different relationship in recent decades than I did when I was a beginning gardener with dead and dying trees. We used to sort of erase them from the landscape. Oh, I've got to get that out of here, you know, right down to the stump, you know, grinder or whatever. And now I really revere them, and I first make them safe and make sure they're, you know, they're okay, they're safe, nobody's going to get harmed, but leave them standing as snags or wildlife trees as long as possible and so forth. And then hopefully their carcass ends up beside where they grew and all this biomass. So let's just talk. I suspect you revere them too.
Oh, yes.
So tell us a little in the last couple of minutes, tell us a little bit about a dead tree and why that's an important creature too in the whole world.
Well, it provides a welcoming habitat for so many of these important insects, and it provides food and habitat for brown creepers that love to go navigate its bark. And it's adding nutrients as it decays. It's returning minerals that were borrowed during the tree's lifetime to the soil so they can be used by other trees, other plants. Very important. A person that I met a couple of years ago, Nancy Lawson, who writes a column for All Animals called The Humane Gardener, recently wrote a book entitled The Humane Gardener, in which she points out the importance of leaving these welcoming habitats for all these creatures that we should welcome, the insects, Many of them are predators and parasites, which help control pests in our garden.
Right.
So if you have a vegetable garden or flower garden, you want to have habitat for these other creatures as well.
Right.
So that they can help control whatever plant eating insects come to your vegetable or flower garden.
Right. Nothing is separate. Nothing is separate from anything else.
We're all intertwined.
Yeah. Well, Jim Nardi, the book is The Hidden Company That Trees Keep. As I said, we'll have a giveaway of a copy of the book with the transcript of this podcast over on awaytogarden.com. And I really, like I said, I compliment you at the beginning. The illustrations are beyond charming, and it's just so packed with information. So thank you very much, and thanks for making time today.
Thank you so much, Margaret, for having me.
Good to speak to you.
Thank you.
Underwriting support from Color Blends, supplying top quality spring blooming Dutch flower bulbs to landscape professionals and ambitious home gardeners. More information on the web, colorblends.com.
Programming and underwriting support from High Mowing Organic Seeds, now offering 100% organic vegetable, flower, and herb seeds for that farm and garden. Available at highmowingseeds.com.
And nice to speak to all of you. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Stitcher or Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com and on Facebook and on Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy gardening meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.